Well, I'm Eddie. I'm an addict.
Hey.
And again, welcome. The speaker for this afternoon's meeting is a Nashville local. And I got to be careful. In early recovery, I was told, and I still am told, that I come in the rooms and identify with whoever I can identify and stick with them and get to know as much about them as I can and surround myself with people who practice the principles that are important to me at that time. And you know, the longer I stay clean, the more I change, the more that group kind of changes. And you know, that's what I do now. I hang out with people who are the kind of people I want to be. And I've been hanging out with Dottie for a while now. And I wanted what she had so badly that I asked her to marry me. So now, that wasn't a suggestion, you know, but it just so happened that, you know, our universe is aligned and bam, there it is. But I see her every day, all day, all night, whatever. And I'm not going to tell you too much about her because she can do a fine job of that. But I will say that she has what I want spiritually, mentally, emotionally, physically, all of it. And she practices it all regularly on a daily basis. And she is the love of my life, and I'm going to introduce her to you now. Patty G.
People in here. I'm Dottie. I'm an addict. If anybody has any tissue and would let me have a couple, please put them up here. Pass them down, because I don't know if I'm going to make it through this without some tears. Did I say I'm Dottie? I'm an addict. I mean, I'm like, oh. This is probably... I think this is probably like the biggest honor of my life to be asked to share with y'all today. I have a disclaimer before I get started that every time I tell my story, thank you, I have this little ritual that I do, and you know, I get on my knees and I ask my higher power to use me in whatever way I can be of the most service. And to just move me out of the way. So, if my talk sucks, blame God. So, just want to get that out of the way. I did my part. So, how I was taught in the beginning to do this was to share what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. And sometimes I'll hear speakers say that I don't want to talk about what it used to be like. We all know what that is. And, you know, for me, I really needed to hear other addicts talk about what it used to be like because that was all I could relate to. So I am going to talk a little bit about where I came from. And hopefully I won't talk the whole time, but I just know that as a newcomer, I couldn't relate to those people that were getting up picking up 1 year, 5 year, 20 year medallions. I related to the people that were picking up white chips and 30 day key tags. I could make that fit for me. Where to start? I haven't done this in a long time too. I grew up in a really large family. I am number 7 out of 8 kids, and I was born in 1962, so that tells you how old I am. And my dad was a Presbyterian minister And my mother was batshit crazy. And literally. And so we grew up in this small town. And I was the seventh out of eight. So my older siblings were involved in a lot of drugs. And they were getting arrested. And some of the things that I can remember going on at that time was my mother being in and out of the hospital. Or actually, I don't really remember that. I remember her not being present. And I don't have a lot of memories of my mother at all as a small child. And she was hospitalized for severe depression numerous times and had tried to kill herself. And then my older siblings were using, doing a lot of drugs. And I can remember our house being raided by cops, and they had apparently gotten arrested for having like the biggest pot field in the history of this small county. And and it was, you know, what I remember about childhood was chaos. And it was chaotic. And I was number seven out of eight, and felt very lost. You know, if y'all know anything about, you know, the kind of family model of addiction, I was kind of like the lost child. And I remember my sisters and older brothers, if there was any kind of parenting to be done, it was by them. My father, the memories I have of him are just his explosive anger. And so I grew up thinking that all this stuff, on some level, thinking that all this chaos in my life or in our family was my fault somehow. And I also, you know, I share some things that are pretty personal to me, but I share them because I know that there's a lot of other me's out there, you know. And I also experienced some significant abuse as a child, and grew up always feeling different, always feeling ashamed. I mean, we say this, every speaker you hear says, you know, I never felt like I belonged anywhere. And that was true for me. I always felt less than, always, always, always. You know, I'd go to school and hand-me-downs, and we weren't like dirt poor, but I didn't get new clothes. You know, my mother made my clothes or I had hand-me-downs, and I always felt different. And I never really attached to people as a child or other. I didn't have like a best friend or close friends. And I remember we were living in this small town in Florida when my dad left the church. He actually got run out by the congregation because of his crazy family and some of his liberal beliefs, but they kind of ousted him. You know, he was a minister for Presbyterian Church, and we had all this chaos going, you know, people are getting arrested, and his wife's in the loony bin, and it was just crazy. So we moved to Charlotte, and this was in 1972, and I remember thinking, going to the big city, it's all going to be better now. And I'm only like 10 years old, thinking that this move is going to shift everything, and that my life is going to change. And well, it did change because I found alcohol and marijuana at that point. When we moved up here, I don't even remember how I got my first drink, but I was 10 years old, and it changed my life. You know, it was like that first time as a child when I drank, it was like I felt like everybody else. I felt normal. I felt like I belonged. I felt just as good as. It took away the fear. I mean, I always remember carrying this fear and the shame and the sense of not belonging anywhere and desperately wanting to belong, to feel safe. You know, I never had that feeling. So that same year, I tried pot. First time you get high, I didn't have any effect, but I knew I wanted to try it again. And then I did try it again, and then I said, oh, this is it. You know, first it was the alcohol, then it was the pot, that this is it. And I started, you know, in those first couple of years just drinking anytime I could, stealing the parents' liquor and all of that, and getting high with the older kids in the neighborhood. And in seventh grade, I went to an experimental school. It was an open school, and I didn't want to go at all. My parents forced me to go, and at that point, that's when I started trying everything. So at 12 years old, I had probably done everything other than used IV narcotics at that point, and was using every day. In the seventh grade, I was under the influence of something at that time, and started getting in a lot of trouble, because one way I found out to get attention was to act out. I was not the one who was the best at everything. I tried that as a young child, and my parents never came to any of my events or sports games or plays or anything. So that didn't work. So I thought, well, let me try the other extreme. You know, if I'm the worst kid, maybe I'll get some attention. And so that's what I did. And at 14, I was in the eighth grade. I was expelled out of the school that I was in and went to a school appropriately named the Street Academy. And so I learned how to shoot narcotics there, and started shooting narcotics at 14. And you can just imagine what the next few years looked like. I dropped out, was expelled for good from the school system about a year later from that, and was exposed to things that no 14-year-old child should ever have to witness or experience, you know. And I didn't know that at the time, and I didn't know that until probably years into recovery, because that was normal for me. That was what, I mean, it was just normal. And I didn't realize until years into recovery that I was a child, you know, that I was a child having these experiences that most people never even hear about, much less witness or engage in. And so I had this, you know, I've talked about the shame, and I just, you know, I could never get rid of the shame. And the more that I used, of course, the more shame I created, and the more shame that I experienced, the more I had to use. And I started not wanting to live. I mean, seriously, not wanting to live. I could not stand who I was, what I had become, and I couldn't stop it. And so I tried to kill myself in a period of 2 years, five times. And you know, and the first couple of attempts were kind of passive, kind of feeble, just, you know, the screaming kind of for help. And then they got more serious, and I was more serious, you know, that I did not want to be on this planet anymore. So I can't, you know, I'm not one of those that can remember a lot of the good old days of using. I didn't have a lot, you know, of those. It just was not my experience. I mean, using for me was an attempt to not feel the pain of my existence. And the more painful my existence became, the more I used. And I was remembering today, I was out for a run, and I really try not to think about my story before I tell it, but I was remembering something my sister told me a couple of years after I got clean. And it was like, and we haven't even talked about this since she told me, but I had tried to kill myself. I don't even remember how old I was, 15, 16 probably. And I guess my parents found me. And she said that I had been comatose for 2 days in the house, and that, you know, I had been, I had lost control of my bodily functions and was regurgitating and going to the bathroom, and they kept changing my sheets, and I was out of it. And they didn't take me to the hospital. And my sister said I was so mad at them, because you could have died and they didn't do anything. And I thought, you know, why didn't they do anything? And I don't know, you know, if they didn't do anything, what it did was just kind of feed that shame that they didn't care about me enough to do anything. And but then I was hospitalized another time for the attempt and was put on a lockdown ward. And but you know, none of that during any of this. I mean, I was always at some point along the way, several different times, I was a counselor intervened or the cops. You know, I started getting arrested too. Failed to mention that, didn't I? But started having run-ins with the law. Me and alcohol and automobiles don't mix. I had like 4 DUIs and several different paraphernalia possession, those kind of drug-related charges. Nothing. I never got a felony, thank God. And but so nowhere along the line did anybody say to me, you know, Dottie, maybe it's the drugs or the alcohol. You know, I remember I seen this shrink one time, and he said to me, I can remember this as clear as day. I think I was about 16 at that point. He said, "You're such a pretty girl. All you need is a little bit of self-esteem." You know, I mean, I'd just gotten out of the hospital. I'd been, you know, hooked up to machines and barely alive and from a suicide attempt, and he thought all I needed was a little self-esteem and I'd be okay. So that might be, you know, the ignorance of the times, too, that we didn't know anything about addiction, and especially as young as I was, we didn't know a lot. But, you know, that gives you, I guess, kind of a picture of what it was like for me. I don't think I need to go into details, but you can imagine what I did to stay high, and if you're imagining it, I did, I'm sure. And, you know, I've really struggled to heal the shame of those years. I mean, it's still probably the biggest issue that I struggle with is the shame of who I was 20-something years ago and things that I did. It's really amazing how deep that runs. So at 21, I went to treatment for the first time. And I didn't even know about 12-step programs. I didn't know about treatment centers. But I knew that I was in a whole shitload of trouble. And I owed a lot of money to some pretty mean people. I had also really screwed up a relationship for probably the last time that I was going to be able to get by with it, because I was, you know, always, oh, I'm sorry, I promise I'll never do it again. And I had lots of good enablers along the way. And I knew that the, oh, I'm sorry, I'll never do it again, probably wasn't going to work this time. And I was a little afraid that I probably wasn't going to be safe, because the people that I messed with were not very nice people. And I thought, well, you know, if I go into this place, I will be off the streets for a while and nobody will find me and, you know, and whatever. No thought of being clean whatsoever. I mean, I don't even think it crossed my mind to go ask for help to stop using. And so I ended up in this treatment center in Charlotte. I lived in Charlotte at the time. It was the McLeod Center. I think it was called Open House then. And now I went in. I have to tell you some stories about being in treatment then to give you just a picture of what my attitude was like, because it was bad. I had a nasty, nasty attitude. And so I went in and you know, I mean, I was in such denial about my addiction, and I had no, there was one time, I got to back up, there was one time when I was 18 that, well, there's actually two times that I tried to halfway clean up and got really sick, and one was I had been on a run with a bunch of downers, and if you try to come off of those real quick, you're going to get real sick, and that happened to me, but so I just started using more so I didn't have to go, oh, my God, I was addicted to those. So I just, you know, used more and wasn't sick anymore, and I thought everything was fine. But I did try to quit drinking. I had gotten in some trouble at work and had gotten some charges around credit card fraud. And people were starting to tell me at that point that I had a problem. And, I mean, these were people that were, like, worse than me telling me this. And I thought, well, I, you know, lost my job. I got in this trouble. And I thought, well, I'm just going to show everybody. I'm going to quit drinking. And I tried to quit drinking. And after about 12 hours, I started getting sick and shaken. And I ran to my car. I did have a car at that time. And went to the store and got a six-pack, and I was fine. And I said to myself, oh, my God, I'm an alcoholic. And I never thought about it again until I ended up in treatment. I never thought about it again because I drank it away. And so that was the only time that I even gave a split moment's thought that there might be a connection between how I was, what was going on and the substance use. But so I go to this treatment center, and I wouldn't come out of my room for the first 3 days, probably mostly because I was very, very sick. And but another big part, which what I told myself, was that I wasn't like these other people, and I wasn't coming out of there. And then they came and told me that if I didn't come, they were going to throw me out. And I said, oh, my God, I can't go back out on the streets because I'm in big trouble out there. And so I went into the classroom. And I remember this lady, I don't know if anybody's here from Charlotte or if you've been there, but her name was Ann R. She was this mean-ass Yankee from New York, and she would tell you what she thought in a skinny New York minute. Didn't think twice about how it affected your feelings. And she said, are you an alcoholic? And I said, hell no. And the whole room busted out laughing, you know, because they'd been in treatment for a while, and I was so humiliated. So I go back to my room, I pack my bags, I'm getting the fuck out of Dodge, you know, and a couple addicts come in there, talk me into staying, and I unpack my bags, and then the next day I go to class, and I'm sick, I'm not sleeping, hadn't slept at all in 4 days at this point. And she says something else to me about being an addict, and it pisses me off. And I said, fuck you. And I go back to my room, and I pack my bags, and I'm leaving. A couple addicts come, talk me out of it, unpack my bags. And this went on for 4 weeks every single day. I was leaving. I was getting the hell out of this place. These people were fucking crazy. And I told them what I thought, too. And they never threw me out. But the kicker was one night, I think I'd been in treatment about 2 weeks, and I always tell this story because it really is kind of funny. And I had been in treatment 2 weeks, hadn't slept. I'd probably slept, I think I'd been sleeping for 2 days, but only like maybe two hours. You know what it's like when you're kicking, and it's just hell. But I was starting to, I was not throwing up and didn't have the runs anymore and all of that. And, you know, but I was not feeling good. And so we used to have volunteers that would come and drive us to meetings. And they were, you know, other addicts in the rooms. And Charles O, if anybody's from Charlotte knows Charles probably, was the volunteer. And he had about 9 months clean at that point. And he was driving a van full of us to a 12-step club for a meeting. And here was my attitude. I didn't know what kind of meetings and I was going to. I think this might have been my first. Well, this probably wasn't the first meeting, but it was the first meeting that I went, like, with the whole group. And took us into this meeting, and he said, just jokingly goes into the club and says, oh, I brought y'all a bunch of drug addicts and alcoholics. And I said, fuck you. Who you calling an addict? And I took off. It was pouring rain this night in Charlotte. I took off hitchhiking. Went and got my brother and another one of my old buddies, brought them back to the treatment center to meet the van when they got back from the meeting to kick his ass. True story. So we're out in the parking lot. It's pouring down rain. I look like a drowned rat. And, you know, and I'm like, at this point, I'm probably less than 100 pounds, 5'2", you know, all up in this guy's face. He's this big. And I got these two big old burly causing a scene. True story. I have people that can verify this. And so A&R and Wallace G were still there that night at the treatment center. They were the counselors. And I don't know why they were still there that late. Well, I do now. I mean, I think it was definitely a God thing because I don't know. I'd be dead if they weren't there. But they come out, defuse the situation, take me back in, and they didn't throw me out. You know, and they used to throw people out every single day and say, make room for somebody that needs this bed, that wants this bed. You might need it, but get out. There's plenty of you out there dying that want this bed. I saw them throw out I don't know how many people. And my attitude was probably 10 times worse. And then I caused this damn brawl in the middle of the treatment center parking lot, and it was crazy. And so, but they didn't throw me out. You know, they talked me into staying, and I don't know. I look back on that, and I don't know how that happened. But I asked Ann several years after that. It was like I was maybe 3 years clean at the time. I said, you know, why didn't y'all throw me out? I said, you know, I saw y'all throwing people out for way less than that. And she looked at me, and she said, Dottie, we knew you were going to die. And, you know, that was pretty real. And, you know, and of course now when I look back, I don't know how I survived. You know, I really, it's just nothing short of the grace of God. I mean, I should have died from a couple of near-fatal suicide attempts. I should have been killed by a couple of good ass-whoopings, risky situations. I mean, I don't know how I survived, but I did. And so, you know, that was in 1983, and I got clean, and I haven't been clean since 1983, I'll say that, but I got clean for about 6 years, almost 6 years, and I was 10 months clean. NA, we had two meetings a week in Charlotte at that time, and they had just started, so, you know, if somebody had 6 months clean, that was a big deal, you know. So you, like, knew everybody, and if you could talk a good program, they wanted you to work in treatment. Back then, the only, you know, credential you needed to have to be a substance abuse counselor was to be recovering. So, true, this is true. So I'm like 10 months clean, 22 years old, been fucked up since I come out of the womb, and they say, you are going to make a good counselor. So I'm working in treatment, 10 months clean, with this history, no therapy, no, you know, that's it. It's just, and I was a mess. I was a mess. You know, I did do a lot of things that were suggested to me back then. I mean, I probably did everything that was suggested to me, but I did everything that was suggested not to do, too. And I mean, did it all. I mean, there, did it all. But I was, what happened to me, and I always like to talk about this because I don't think that my experience is unique at all, that when I quit using, my addiction manifested in many, many different forms. And I got really sick with bulimia for a couple of years after I got clean. And got just as sick with that as I did probably with the drugs and alcohol. And this was a huge secret. You know, I wasn't telling, I was going to meetings, working in the field, sponsoring all these people, and I'm puking my guts out every day and in this obsessive cycle and almost die twice in recovery from my eating disorder and go to treatment for that. And, you know, then that kind of gets under control and I get into this whole relationship, you know, obsession with that and then shopping and exercise. I mean, I was spending 4 hours a day exercising and I was just in this vicious cycle for years of obsession and compulsion. One using the drug, but I remember when I was like 4 years, you know, for me, the fog, I don't think I quit withdrawing until after 2 years, you know. I mean, I was still withdrawing. And then the fog started lifting and I started, you know, going into that depression and started going, what is wrong with me? You know, I'm going to meetings. I was going to meetings every day, doing service work, talking to my sponsor and just sinking further and further into depression and dysfunctional behavior. And, you know, I was miserable and I really struggled for a couple of years, you know, thinking I'm so miserable here in recovery, I might as well get loaded, you know. And the obsession, what happened for me was that I had a reservation that never left. And mine was because I was 21 when I first come in here. It was, you know, I was only 21, so maybe I'm not really an addict. Maybe all of that was just a phase. I mean, I've never seen phases quite like that, but it was a long phase, I'm going to tell you that. But, you know, it never left. I mean, it would go away, but it would come back up. And I'm, like, working in treatment at this time, and I'm way, way sick, and I'm feeling more and more like a phony, and I'm getting more isolated, not talking about what's going on. And, of course, the more isolated I get, the more I'm not talking about what's going on and telling on my disease, the more I'm acting out. Still going to meetings. You know, I left a meeting and picked up. I walked right out of that meeting with almost 6 years clean. Didn't hear a word that was said in that meeting, and picked up. And my sponsor had moved up here to Asheville, and this was in 89, about 9 months before I picked up. And so the not telling on my disease and the dishonesty just snowballed. I mean, that just gave me a great excuse not to talk about what was going on. But I left a meeting, and I remember I was house-sitting for somebody in recovery whose partner was not in recovery and probably wasn't an addict, but they had some alcohol in the house. And I had a bottle of vodka in my hand and the phone in the other, and I said, I made a deal with God. I said, God, I'm going to call my sponsor first, but if she's not there, I'm going to take a drink. You know, I was going to drink it, whether she picked up that phone or not. And I did, and it took me about 10 days after I picked up that bottle to end up in the hospital OD'd. And you don't think this disease is progressive, whether or not we're using or not. You know, I'm here to tell you that it was as if I had never put the shit down and then some. And, of course, at that point, my goal was suicide. I mean, I was going to drink and use. And, I'm just going to drink. You know, I'm not going to use any dope. And that lasted all of about 2 hours. And so, you know, as soon as I got the alcohol in me, I'm out, you know, hunting for the dope. And so I ended up, they didn't want to put me in treatment in Charlotte because I had been working in the field. And they put me up here at, it was McLeod now. And, that was so awful because the director at the time was somebody that I used to sit in meetings with. And he was like a newcomer that I watched him come in. And it was like I had all this pride that just ate me alive. I was so humiliated. And so I come up here to McLeod and I go through treatment. And I get this counselor who's had a very similar story. Had relapsed when she had like 7 years, and she was just not having any of my shit. And you know, I got out of treatment. I went and I moved in with my sponsor for a couple of months till I could get back on my feet, and started going back to meetings again, but was dead inside. I mean, if anybody has used after having any time, it's devastating. I mean, you know, I remember when I was trying to get clean that how hard it was, because it was like I didn't fit in the rooms anymore and I didn't fit in the streets anymore because some kind of change had taken place. And it was like purgatory is kind of how I think about it. I mean, I could not get to either side. And then, you know, I think about the compulsion of the disease, because I was like begging God. I mean, literally on my knees begging God to get me back to the rooms. And I couldn't stop using. And I couldn't stop to get here. So thank God, you know, that I had people that intervened and that got me in treatment. Because I'm not one of those people that could have come in the rooms and stopped or done outpatient. I mean, the compulsion to use was so strong, and the obsession, it was, I just couldn't have done it. But I got out of treatment and I stayed clean maybe 6 months and got loaded again. That lasted 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, and I ended up in jail. And I remember thanking the cop when she got me. I said, "You just saved my life." She pulled me out of the projects. You know, I said, "You just saved my life. Thank you." She said, "I don't think I've ever had anybody say thank you for getting arrested." And, but she did. I mean, she did. She saved my life. And so get back in the rooms. And, you know, I'm trying again and just feeling dead inside. And, used again. One, as got clean maybe 6 months that time, and I went out one more night, and it was just the most bizarre thing. And well, it's probably not bizarre to y'all, but I had more dope than I ever could have possibly wanted in my whole using career, and I could not get high. No matter how much I used, I could not get high. And it wasn't because the dope was bad. And I remember this whole thing going on in my head, you know, and it's like God or the higher power is like grace. I had this moment of sanity, and it was like God said, "Okay, you got a few choices here. You can keep on doing what you're doing, not go back to the rooms, not try to get clean." And I mean, you know, for me, using, I couldn't even imagine using another 50 years and living out in the way that I've been living. That was, I could not imagine that. It was hell. And I said, "Oh, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that." God says, "Okay, well, you can try to kill yourself again. You know, that's been an out, an option before." And somebody said to me in a meeting one time, I think I was talking about suicide and all of this, and they said, "Well, Dottie," said, "if you kill yourself, then you're stuck with you for eternity." And I said, "Oh, hell no." You know, that's out. That's out. Not going there, because, you know, I was desperately trying to get away from me. And then the third option is go back to the rooms. And, you know, I went back to the rooms and I felt nothing inside, almost as if my soul had been ripped right out of my being. I mean, I just felt dead. And I can remember thinking those first 2 years, because it was about 2 years before I realized, you know, I was here. And I was like getting something better than I ever even dreamed about having the first time that I was clean. But you know, I just kept coming to meetings, talking to my sponsor, praying, doing step work, reading the literature. I mean, studying the hell out of that literature. You know, and what I was taught about the literature is that we call it a textbook for a reason, that it's not like a novel, that it's something to be studied. And I really believe in studying the literature. And I just kept, you know, I remember something A&R used to say, bring the body and the mind will follow. And I just kept bringing the body and bringing the body. And, I don't know that I had any kind of hope of getting anything back. But I knew that it was better than being out there. Because being out there, it was hell, man. And, you know, I'm not going to die out there. I'm going to live out there and suffer, I mean, is what's going to happen to me. And so, you know, I just did it. And, you know, I did some stupid shit. I worked as a bartender for a while. And, you know, wouldn't recommend that to anybody. But, you know, my sponsor kept saying, "I don't think you ought to be doing that." And, you know, I took her advice after a while and just had to trust that if I did what I needed to do to take care of my recovery, and this is still true today, you know, that the universe, God, the divine will take care of the rest. And that's like the only thing I know after all these years of being around here, is that if I do what I need to do to take care of my recovery, everything's going to be fine. It is fine. You know, it is fine. Something was very different, though, this time. And, you know, what I know, or what I've kind of come to for myself, is that what's different is that I surrendered and I got rid of the reservations that I had. I still had reservations that somehow I was going to be able to figure this shit out and use successfully. You know, from the minute I started using, it was not casual social use. I mean, how many people do you see sitting around shooting dope? I mean, socially injecting IV drugs. I mean, yeah, it just doesn't happen. And the interesting thing for me, too, about this period of recovery, I got clean in 1990 for good, and was that since that night, that last night where those three choices were presented to me, I've not had the obsession to use. And that was not true the first time that I thought about using frequently, you know, and I have not had a desire to get high since I came back, for real. And I really attribute that to having no more reservations. I'm an addict, you know. I am an addict, and I know that. So how recovery has been since then has been, you know, it's been amazing. It's an incredible process, recovery is, and I never in a million years would have pegged me being where I am, who I am in my life right now. And I still struggle with a lot of similar issues, maybe not as intensely. Definitely not as intensely. And I would say that they don't control my life anymore, but a lot of the fears and the shames totally controlled me for many years, and I don't feel like I am controlled by that anymore. You know, I was talking to some folks right before the meeting about going back to school, and when I came into recovery in 1983, I had a ninth grade education, and I tried to go back to school. Well, if you see my transcripts, it looks like probably 20 times, and I had lots of W's, withdrawals, incompletes, and I would go back to college, and I'd start a class, and I'd freak out. It'd be hard, and I'd say, oh, I'd quit. You know, I can't do this. It's hard. I quit. And that was a pattern for me. You know, first thing I ever finished in my life was treatment. And true. And I had myself convinced that, you know, I had these tapes that I was too stupid, that I wasn't smart enough, that I didn't have what it took. And I quit trying even to go back to school. And so that was like the only, when I got clean this time, that was like the only real, after doing my step work, regret that I still had was that I did not have an education. And I was getting older and, you know, knew that at some point, I knew why I was clean. I mean, I knew why I was put here on this planet and why I survived, that that there was a use for me, and I wanted to be able to fulfill what I thought was God's will. And so I went back to school, I think it was in 1999, and you know, I'll never forget when I finished, like I went back to the community college first and got my two-year AA degree, and I've never been so an AA degree. I thought that was kind of cool. But I've never been so proud of anything in my life as I was when I walked down and picked up that diploma. And, you know, nobody knew me from Adam, but that was the proudest moment I think I ever experienced. And went to the university, and I was terrified. Oh, my God. I was like, the university. I mean, all these people are, like, really smart, and I can't do this. I mean, I had all this fear, and went to the university and got my bachelor's degree and graduated, you know, summa cum laude and 4.0 and all of this shit. It was like, oh, my God. I couldn't believe it. And then went to graduate school and got a damn master's degree. And, you know, I mean, I still can't hardly, like, believe that, you know, that I'm, like, a well-educated person. It's kind of, it's like, no way. I always say, it's like, I think to myself a lot, you know, that people like me are not supposed to be people like me, you know, that I knew at one point in my active addiction, you know, I tell this a lot, even in meetings, that I can remember just resigning myself to the fact that it's going to be a drunk and a junkie. This is how my life is, how it's always going to be. I never even considered the possibility of it not being this way. And I remember one night I'd been, you know, out on a binge, and I was up and I was kind of, you know, geeking, peeking through the blinds and watching people go into work, and it was like 8 o'clock in the morning, and they were taking their kids to the bus stop and getting the paper out of the yard, you know, all these normal kind of things that I'm watching people do. And I remember just shaking my head and saying, I'll never be like that. You know, I mean, I saw no hope of having any kind of normal life, but I am kind of like that. You know, I go get the paper out of the mailbox every day, and I go to work, and I have a job that I love, and opportunities that, you know, just dreams are coming true. You know, I feel like this last year has been like a fairy tale that it's really amazing when I stop and think about it, because I, you know, some people I really admire and am amazed by people that come in and just like grab a hold of this program and work the steps, and life just bam, it starts clicking, starts working. You know, it's taken me like 20 something years to get here. You know, that I've struggled a lot in my recovery. And, but you know, how I understand that today is like we all come in with different histories, you know, with different. Some of us didn't start using until we were 18 and didn't create, you know, this world of shit. Some of us came from halfway functional families. I mean, it just kind of all depends on what kind of baggage we come in with, how we progress. And how I interpreted that for me was that I was really fucked up and this program wasn't going to work for me. You know, so I'm saying this to say that that's not true. Yeah, you probably are pretty fucked up. I was. But the program will work. You know, it just might take a little bit of time. One of the things that was said to me a lot was, it's 50 miles in, 50 miles out. And I don't think that for me it actually was 50 miles out, you know. But it was some miles out that it took, and it is taking some time to undo the wreckage of the past, you know. And I don't know if anybody read Today's Just for Today, but I love that. You know, it talked about the word recover and wanting to recover what we once had. Well, I don't want to recover any of that shit. You know, I want to create something new. And you know, for me, what happened, you know, like in treatment, you'll hear the term rehabilitation. And like for this addict, it wasn't a matter of rehabilitating me. It was a matter of habilitating me. I mean, I had to like learn from scratch how to be functional and basic life skills. I mean, I didn't know how to do it. And so I had to learn a lot of that stuff. And so, you know, I still do pretty much everything that I have been taught to do. Well, yeah, I do everything I've been taught to do in this program. And that's go to meetings regularly, work with the sponsor, work steps, develop a relationship with a higher power, study the literature, and carry the message in whatever way works. And we can carry the message in many, many, many different ways, different forms. So I'm not the world's greatest at service work. I think I'm still traumatized from my experiences from the 80s. But I'm not great at holding positions and things like that, but I do a lot of sponsorship. I try to be available on the phone. I'm involved in a home group. You know, but the people that I know in recovery that have what I want all do the same things. And it's, you know, those things. Go to meetings, work steps, work with a sponsor, study the literature, and work on a relationship with a higher power. And, you know, it kind of scares me, the thought of, you know, I've been around a long time, seen a lot of people quit coming to meetings. And, you know, that really freaks me out. And we were talking the other night. I mean, for me, it's not even logical. It's not a logical option. Why would I stop doing something that saved my life? Not a difficult question. And so I'm just not willing to take that risk. You know, there is so much power in these rooms. And I said in my home group a couple of weeks ago, I said, you know, to this day, this is the only place that I am where I feel totally okay in my skin. This is the only place where I feel totally accepted for who I am and where I've been. I don't feel that way in the real world, in my professional life. I mean, I'm more comfortable than I used to be, but I'm still different. Different. You know, and I still have some of those feelings. But I can walk in here and I feel right at home. Right at home. So let's see. This year has been an amazing year. And every year, actually, over the last 5 or 6 have just blown me out of the water. You know, I have a husband that I'm madly in love with. I have a job that I love. I have a home that I love. I have a stepdaughter. I never had children, partially due to my addiction and getting that experience, and new opportunities, an opportunity to create a dream that I've had for many years professionally. And I do, you know, I'm doing what I love. My job is like, I mean, yeah, some of it's like a job, but it's, but a lot of it's like this, you know, it is. It's like working with a bunch of people like me. So, gosh, you know, and I mean, I don't really know what to say other than I'm really just truly humbled to be here with y'all. And one nice thing about speaking, and especially able to speak to a crowd this large, is that, you know, just the opportunity to say thank you, you know, because I am clean and have the life that I have because of y'all. I may never have seen you before today, but over the last 20 years, it's people just like y'all. It's the principles, it's the steps, it's the program of Narcotics Anonymous that has given me this. And I mean, I'm telling you that it is grace, grace, grace that I'm here. It's not by anything that I have personally done, because I've done some stupid shit in recovery. You know, I can remember trying to convince my sponsor at one point when I was early in recovery, you know, maybe 6 months clean, something like that. I had to kind of detach from some family members. You know how we kind of got to watch the old playgrounds and playmates, and some of my old playmates were family members, and I'm telling my sponsor, oh, I need to go see my brother. I need to see him. I miss my brother. He's blood. Now, this was like my main using buddy. And she says, okay. I'd been, you know, badgering her about this for several months. She says, okay, well, I'll take you over there. Thank God she went with me, because, yeah, I kind of have this visual now of that day. It was an afternoon, and I walked in and I was like all excited, and this is my disease telling me to go get high is what it was, but I'm like all excited to go see my brother. My sponsor's in the car waiting for me. I walk in, there's a bunch of dope on the kitchen table, and I screamed. I went, ah! And I turned around and ran outside, and she was just like, she knew. She didn't even go in. She knew exactly what happened. But, you know, I did lots of stupid shit like that. I mean, I had to test it. You know, I went to bars, a couple of bars, well, a lot of bars, actually, to be honest, in the beginning, and I did some pretty stupid stuff. But, you know, I always say this, that, you know, I did everything y'all told me not to do, but I did everything you told me to do too, and that's what kept me clean, doing everything I wasn't supposed to do. So I don't test those waters anymore. But anyway, I don't think I have anything else to say other than thank you so much for, it's kind of funny to think about people sat here and listened to me for an hour. Yeah, but thank you for, listen, people ran when my mouth opened, trust me. And or told me to shut up. And so thank you and bless you.
Thank you, Dottie. Someone please read just for today.
My name is Jen, I'm an addict. Yay. Just for today, tell yourself.
No.
Just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program and I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. And just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using, and have found a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear. Thanks.
Circle up, we'll close.
You're welcome. Add what? Had to be done good to keep me awake. It's been a long 2 days.
It has been a long 2 days.
Have a moment of silence. Prayer.
God, grant us serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Just for today, keep coming back. It works if you work it.
That's when you know.
All righty.